Welcome to Idiom America, the podcast that's all about idioms, those bits of language that are more than the sum of their parts. And let's dive right in with some sick idioms. And I'm not talking sick idioms as in the 90s slang sense of the term, like cool, rad, awesome, gnarly, wicked, but sick as in feeling ill, under the weather. But there's an interesting relationship between slang and idioms. You could say that slang is idiom in embryo, because a lot of idioms start out as slang. And some say that's the big difference, that slang is not as widespread, that it's jargon that's only used by a certain group of people in certain contexts, whereas idioms can be used by anyone in a greater variety of contexts, at work or more formal settings, for example. There are a few other differences. Idioms are usually made up of more than one word, whereas slang can be just one. The straightforward meaning of the words making up an idiom don't match their idiomatic meaning, whereas in slang they can. But there's a lot of overlap there, no doubt. I was observing my nieces and nephews a few months back using some contemporary slang like bussin' to refer to something really good, excellent, and slappin', meaning kind of the same thing, maybe even a bit better than bussin' as I understand it, which admittedly is not well, and especially slay, which seemed to be a favorite, as in she slayed it or did it so well that she killed it, or just as an adjective, that concert was slay. And my brother and I were kind of amused by it all and wondering what slang we were using growing up in the 90s that our parents were just shaking their heads at. And the first thing that popped in my mind was how everything was so sick back then. There's a lot more of that, and it's kind of fun to take a quick trip down memory lane with a few 90s classics. Take sup, for those for whom what's up was not a short enough way to ask what's up, or aight, as in sup, nothing, how are you, I'm aight, or the succinct power of the word word. You feel me? Word. You picking up what I'm putting down? Word. Or hella. Everything was hella. That's hella tasty. That's hella smart. That's hella dope. Or the shiznit. Or how everything was the bomb. Or if something great happened. Booyah. Or oh snap. Or go on. Those sarcastic reposts as if, not, or whatever. But back to the sick idioms. The one that gave me the idea for this episode is under the weather. I was listening to an engrossing story about the Wager, a British ship that left England in 1740 on a secret mission to chase a Spanish treasure-filled galleon known as the Prize of All the Oceans. And the Wager ran aground in rough seas trying to round the Horn, sail through Cape Horn off the tip of Patagonia, where the Atlantic and Pacific come together to produce probably the most treacherous seas anywhere in the world, with howling winds that can produce graybeards or Cape Horn rollers, that are waves that can measure a mile from crest to crest and reach heights of 200 feet. Cape Horn's at 56 degrees latitude, and as the old saying goes, below 40 degrees there is no law. Below 50, there is no God. Anyway, I won't spoil the story, as there's a book that just came out about the Wager that's a great riveting read of narrative nonfiction that I recommend. It's called The Wager, A Tale of Shipwreck, Mutiny, and Murder. At any rate, it explains that the origin of the idiom under the weather, like so many great idioms, is nautical by nature. Not because I hate you. Sorry, still in the 90s slang mindset here. But to the extent I'd thought about this one under the weather, I'd just kind of associated it with bad weather. Gray, cloudy, gloomy days that make you want to stay in bed. But it turns out that this one refers to how when there was bad weather, like when rounding the Horn, sailors who were getting seasick would go below deck to get away from the bad weather conditions. Hence, you're literally escaping to a place that's under the weather. And the original phrases were under the weather bow, or under the weather rail, or under the weather quarter, or under the weather side, as the weather side or bow or rail of a ship refers to the side that faces the wind, the windward side. But But in time, these got shortened to just under the weather and came to be used by everyone, not just those seasick sailors taking shelter from violent weather. And as an aside, the book The Wager also explains that another idiom, to turn a blind eye, became a popular expression after Vice Admiral Horatio Nelson deliberately placed his telescope against his blind eye to ignore his superior signal flag to retreat. And this took place on April 2nd, 1801, during the Battle of Copenhagen in Britain's war with Napoleon's France. And it's been called the most famous act of insubordination in British naval history. Back then, naval orders were transmitted via a system of signal flags, and when Nelson's commanding admiral, Sir Hyde Parker, ordered him to withdraw from battle, Nelson put the telescope to his blind eye and said, "I really don't see any signal." Anyway, Nelson went on to win the battle and negotiate an armistice, and to turn a blind eye went on to enter the lexicon as an idiom meaning to pretend not to notice something. Another nautical idiom for getting sick is green around the gills. Heard less frequently as green about the gills. Used to refer to someone who looks sick or nauseated. When she came off the turbulent flight, she was looking a little green around the gills. And the use of green to describe an ailing person's complexion dates from about 1300, and gills has referred to the flesh around human jaws and ears since the 1600s, but the origin of this one is a little cloudy. It seems to date from the 1800s, and as anyone who likes to fish knows, fish gills are a deep, dark blood red, so presumably a fish with green gills is a sick one indeed. Probably a dead, rotting one, honestly. Speaking of nautical, it's worth mentioning that it shares a root with the word nausea, which is of Greek origins, where their term for seasickness was nausea. And this is actually a combination of two words in the Greek language, nos, meaning ship, and the suffix ia, meaning sickness. So when put together, the word nausea literally means ship sickness. Let's stick with this sick nautical theme, with feeling groggy, meaning that you're feeling kind of confused and foggy-headed, dazed or lethargic, maybe because you just woke up, maybe because you're feeling under the weather, or maybe because you're a boxer whose bell just got rung. The adjective groggy comes from another admiral in the British Royal Navy, Admiral Vernon, who was the commander-in-chief of the West Indies in the 1700s, and his nickname was Old Grog. And this came from the fact that Admiral Vernon was renowned for watering down his sailors' rum ration. And this watered-down rum became known as grog. And today, of course, grog is slang for any liquor, and to feel groggy can also mean to feel drunk or tipsy. So that's groggy. How about froggy? Or, to be precise, frog in the throat. When someone tells you that you have a frog in your throat, they're saying you sound sick. You got a raspy, dry voice, laryngitis, maybe. And often it refers to something mild and temporary, maybe some phlegm in the throat that you can clear by affecting a slight cough. And there are a lot of stories floating around the internet about how this one has its origins in the idea that frogs were supposedly a medieval cure for various maladies, but it seems that those are apocryphal and that this one arose in the United States in the 1800s for no other reason than a person so afflicted sounds like he's croaking like a frog. In the 1890s, there was actually a sore throat lozenge called Frog in Your Throat, and it was super well advertised, and even the newspapers were covering the advertising. For example, from the Shetland Times out of Scotland in 1894, and then a little article titled Novel Window Advertising. A frog in your throat display in the shop window of Mr. Lang, chemist, has attracted considerable attention during the week. This is one of the latest developments of Yankee advertising and has been devised to introduce Hans Brothers and White's Frog in Your Throat lozenges, a new lozenge for the cure of coughs and throat troubles. The expression frog in your throat is in common use in America, where if a person coughs or shows any hoarseness or huskiness of the voice, he is sure to be asked, "What's the matter? Got a frog in your throat?" The chief feature of the above show is the love story in four chapters. Chapter one is entitled Love at First Sight and shows a lady frog who waltzed out for a walk has attracted the attention of a susceptible gentleman frog. And then it goes on for three more chapters. We got arrival to the gentleman frog and then chapter three, proposal of marriage, and ends in chapter four with the happy pair with a baby frog. Or is put in another article about a similar window display. There are big frogs and little frogs, professional frogs and working class frogs, idle frogs and industrious frogs, frogs standing up and frogs sitting down, frogs walking and frogs jumping, and a frog's love story set forth in four chapters. The latter might be called a variation of the history of the frog who would a wooing go. Heady advertising at the time, I guess, but no surprise, I think, that this lozenge is no longer around with a name like that, no matter how many frogs they crammed into window displays. If you're feeling off kilter, you're feeling a little sick, somewhat ill, not completely well. I'm still feeling a little off kilter after having the flu a few weeks ago. And you sometimes hear this one as out of kilter as well, and it means more generally out of equilibrium, not straight or level, confused or chaotic, out of whack. But that's about the only context in which you ever hear kilter. You never hear about someone feeling in kilter or something being as in kilter as can be, couldn't be more kilter. It's like vim in that way, from vim and vigor, the first idiom we kicked off this podcast with almost 2 years ago, in that it doesn't really stand alone as a word. It's just part of an idiomatic phrase. Or so I thought anyway, but the Oxford English Dictionary tells me otherwise, as apparently it used to be used positively in the phrases in kilter or in good kilter or in high kilter. But the last positive example of this it has is from the 1820s, so this usage has certainly fallen out of favor. I did find a more modern usage in another dictionary, though, that doesn't sound that out of place. It was talking about bringing a country's economy back into kilter with the Western economic system. And etymologists are kind of stumped about the origin of this word. It appears to have arisen in the early 1600s, though, and it's a variant of an older English dialect word, kelter, meaning good health or good condition. And in case you were wondering, it doesn't appear to have anything to do with the word kilt, though, which I looked up in Ambrose Bierce's The Devil's Dictionary from around 1900 to see what it had to say about it, and it gave me a little chuckle. It defined kilt as a costume sometimes worn by Scotchmen in America and Americans in Scotland. A similar one here is to feel out of sorts, meaning you feel a little unwell or a little off, not in one's usual health or state of mind. And this one actually goes back to the age of typesetting in the 17th century. Typographers and printers used the word sorts to describe the set of letters that they used to print things, and they would usually have them in alphabetical order, and so when a letter was out of place, they'd say it was out of sorts. And eventually the phrase became idiomatic and applied to just about anything that was off, out of place, not like the usual, in particular one's health or state of being. If you're afflicted with a bit of mild depression, you could be said to be feeling down in the dumps or to simply be down in the dumps. And this is one that's always evoked an image for me of a literal dump, a landfill where trash or garbage is disposed. Oscar the Grouch living in his trash can, which seems like pretty depressing living conditions, but turns out that this one has nothing to do with that kind of dump, surprisingly. According to the Dictionary of Clichés, this is not dump refuse heap, but dump in one of its other meanings, now largely obsolete. The meaning of mental haze could fit, and so could the meaning of mournful tune, but the connection has never been squarely made. The expression goes so far back that the connection may never be made. Sir Thomas More had it in A Dialogue of Comfort Against Tribulation in 1529. What heaps of heaviness hath of late fallen among us already, with which some of our poor family be fallen into such dumps? Shakespeare used the term several times, for example, in The Taming of the Shrew, 1596. Why, how now, daughter Katharina, in your dumps? or from Romeo and Juliet. When griping grief the heart doth wound, and doleful dumps the mind oppress. Francis Gross's Classical Dictionary of the Vulgar Tongue, 1785, has this to say. Dumps, down in the dumps, low-spirited, melancholy, jocularly said to be derived from Dumpos, a king of Egypt who died of melancholy. Sick as a dog is perhaps one of the more widely used idioms for feeling sick, and it's been around for a long time, at least since the late 1500s, but probably much earlier. But lots of animals get sick, so why dogs? Some say it comes from dogs' habit of merrily munching whatever they can get their mouths on and then vomiting it up later. And this might have some merit, as an animal like the horse, for example, can't vomit. And according to the Dictionary of Clichés, again, this vomit connection is indeed the reason, as it says that it comes from the Bible. There, you got Proverbs 26:11. As a dog returneth to his vomit, so a fool returneth to his folly. Or 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 22, the dog is turned to his own vomit again. Others posit that it has something to do with the fact that dogs have long been associated with several negative connotations in language, like dog tired, dog poor, dirty dog, dog eat dog, dog's breakfast, dog in the manger, or saying that things have gone to the dogs. Or it's a dog's life, a phrase that first appeared way back in 1528 to describe a miserable existence. Or to die a dog's death was to come to a miserable end. And this all has something to do, I'm sure, with the fact that dogs' lives back then were a lot rougher than they are today. And a lot of people saw them as these vicious, dangerous, disease-ridden creatures, and that were used either for guard work or for work, which led to them being abused and ill-fed. Well, you might be getting sick of hearing about sick idioms, sick and tired of them, maybe even sick to death of them, or maybe they're just leaving you feeling a little ill at ease, ill-disposed, worried that so much sick talk bodes ill for your own health. So I'll end it here, wishing you all the best of health, hoping that you're all right as rain, fit as fiddles, fit as fleas, in fine fettle, in the pink, in top form, hale and hearty, ship-shape, with springs in your step, the very pictures of health. Hella good. Until next time.